Okay, in Parshas Shmini, great to learn with everyone. In Perek Yud, it takes us to the first day of Nisan. It's a year after the Geula from Egypt, from Mitzrayim, and the Divine Presence fills the Mishkan. This was supposed to be Aaron's big week. He's the Kohen Gadol. And on this first day of the Mishkan, it says that they offered all the sacrifices. In Pasuk Chav Dalet, it says, "Vateitzei Eish Melefnei Hashem Vatochel Al Mizbeach Et Ola Vetachalavim," that a fire came down and consumed all the offerings that were brought on that day of inauguration. Vayar Kol Ha'am Vayaronu Vayiplu Al Paneihem, and everyone was happy. Everyone was singing. Everyone fell upon their faces, in terms of bowing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on that first day of Nisan, first day of the Mishkan. But then, right after that, in Parsha Shmini, so disaster strikes, and the pasuk, the very next pasuk, Perek Yud, pasuk Aleph, it says, "Vayichu b'nei Aaron Nadav v'Avihu," two of Aaron's sons, Nadav and Avihu, "ish machtaso," they each take their fire pan, "vayinu behen eish," and they put fire on it, "vayasimu olek ketores," and they put incense. So there is incense. "Vayakrivu lifnei Hashem eish zara asher lo tiva otam," and they bring a fire with the incense that they had not been commanded. "Vateitzei eish milifnei Hashem vatochal otam vayomutu lifnei Hashem," a fire comes out from Hashem and consumes them, and they die on that day, the pasuk says, in front of Hashem. We have a terrible tragedy that occurs on the opening day of the Mishkan, a personal tragedy for Aaron's family, a national tragedy, as this affects Aaron's family, and this is taking place in the Holy of Holies in the Mishkan. You see already a contrast with the pasuk that precedes this episode. It says, "Vateitze eish melefnei Hashem," in pasuk Chav Dalet. And now here with Nadav and Avihu, again it says, "Vateitze eish melefnei Hashem." But "Vateitze eish melefnei Hashem," previously was when they brought the authorized karbanos, and the fire came out and consumed the karbanos, which is the way that it was supposed to happen, and people were very happy. And now we have the same words, "Vateitze eish melefnei Hashem," but instead of consuming the sacrifices, it consumes and kills Nadav and Avihu, the two children, two of the four children of Aaron HaKohen. And after their death in the Holy of Holies, the pasuk relates cryptically, pasuk Gimel, and so I wanted to take a little bit of time to explore this pasuk. It says, "Vayomer Moshe Aaron, Hu asher diber Hashem lemor," this is what Hashem spoke about when he said, "Bekrovai ekodesh v'alpanei kol ha'am ekabed v'yidom Aharon." This is what Hashem spoke about when he said, "I will be sanctified through those who are nearest me, through those who are righteous. Thus I will be honored before the entire people." And Aaron was silent. And so the question is, how do we understand this pasuk? This is again taking place right after this terrible tragedy that occurs on the very first day of the Mishkan, which was supposed to be a day of celebration. It began as a day of celebration, and now it suddenly takes a terrible turn for the worse, and now it becomes a day of tragedy. So what does it mean when it says that Hashem said that Bekrovai HaKadosh, that Hu Asher Dibar Hashem, Hashem said that he'll be sanctified through those who are closest to him? We find a few different explanations in the Mefarshim. So Rashi explains that Moshe was comforting Aaron. He was giving nechama to Aaron. Take a look at Rashi. Hu Asher Dibar, Heichan Dibar, that when did Hashem speak about the Mishkan being sanctified through those who are closest to him? It was a pasuk in Parshas Titzaveh, back in Shmos. It says, "V'no'adati shama livnei Yisrael v'nikdash bichvodi," that Hashem said that I will meet with Bnei Yisrael by the Mishkan, v'nikdash bichvodi, and I will be sanctified through my glory. But al tikri bichvodi, but that word bichvodi could also be read as b'mechubadai, that Hashem says I will be sanctified not through my glory only, but an additional level of interpretation is that Hashem says I will be sanctified b'mechubadai through those who honor me, through those who are close to me, through the righteous. So that's where Hashem kind of hinted that he's going to be sanctified and the Mishkan is going to be sanctified in some way through those who are close to Hashem. Amar lo Moshe li Aaron, Rashi says. Moshe said to Aaron, the bereaved father, he says, Aaron achi, Aaron, my brother, yodeh hayiti sheitchadesh habayit b'miyodav shel makom. I knew that the house would be sanctified through those who are close to Hashem. Vayiti savor o biyobach. I thought it was going to be me or you. I thought it was going to be one of me or you somehow, that we would have to sacrifice in some way, we would have to give in some way, something would happen to us that would honor, that would somehow sanctify God's name. Achshav roa ani, but now I see that it wasn't through me or you, but rather through your children. Shehem gedolim mimeni umimcha. And they're greater than me and you. So according to Rashi, what Moshe is saying here to Aaron is he's kind of giving maybe perhaps a little bit of an explanation, but really he's giving him nechama. He's saying that I knew that the Mishkan would be sanctified through someone close to Hashem. It's based on a pasuk in Tetzaveh. I thought it was going to be me or you, but it turns out that it's through your children. And it was a terrible tragedy, but in this way, it kind of increases Yiras Shamayim. It increases reverence for the sanctity of the Mishkan, for God's laws. And they had done something that was unauthorized. They brought a karban and they brought the incense, Asher Lo Tziva Otam. Different explanations of what went wrong and how they made the mistake. But they did something wrong and they went into the Holy of Holies. But really, they were righteous. And through this action, through this incident, as tragic as it was, it brought sanctity to the Mishkan. It brought additional reverence to Hashem. It increased Yiras Shamayim among the people of Israel. But if you want to kind of just to summarize Rashi is saying that this pasuk is serving as a nechama. Aaron is an onain. He just lost his children. He's going to be sitting Shiva. He's a father who just lost two of his sons. And so what does a person do? What does a family member do? What does a friend do? They try to give nechama to the person. And Moshe is giving nechama to Aaron, as tragic and as painful as this is. But you should know that they were very righteous. And God had hinted to me that something along these lines was going to happen. The Rashbam, however, explains differently. The Rashbam says, Hu asher dibar Hashem mikrovei HaKodesh, that I'm going to be sanctified through those who are close to me. The Rashbam, who's a grandson of Rashi, he says that Moshe's words are not intended as nechama, as consolation, but rather this was an instruction to Aaron. The Rashbam says that bekrovei HaKodesh, I'm going to be sanctified through those who are close to me. Bekohanim gedolim HaKrovim Eli, that I'm going to be sanctified through the Kohen Gadol and through the Kohanim who are close to me to serve me. And he wrote to Lehit Kadesh. Shekein Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that even if something terrible happens and the Kohen Gadol suffers a loss, he has to continue doing the service in the Mishkan. And the service has to continue. I'm not going to say the words, the show must go on. Maybe that's a little bit insensitive. But basically the Rashbam is saying that what Moshe is saying to Aaron, the Krovei HaKodesh, it's a charge to Aaron to say, I understand you are grieving, and we all are, but the Krovei HaKodesh, God is sanctified by those who are closest to him, namely you, the Kohanim. And Moshe is giving a charge to Aaron that despite your loss, or perhaps inspired by your loss, you and your family must heroically move forward. That's the Rashbam. And then we see in the Pasuk, it says, Vayidoma Aaron, that Aaron's response, which is that Aaron was silent. Vayidoma Aaron. And perhaps one could suggest, I'd like to suggest that these are three different dimensions of response to the tragedy of Aaron losing his sons. And these are perhaps three different dimensions of our response when we go through suffering, when we suffer loss, when the nation of Israel suffers difficulty and suffers tragedy. One is Aaron's silence. That's one dimension. A second is Moshe's words, as understood by Rashi, which is words of Nechama, that they died al Kiddush Hashem. And the third is Moshe's response, as understood by Rashbam, which is that it's an instruction to move forward. And perhaps this could serve as a framework, these three dimensions. It's Rashi, Rashbam, and what Aaron does in response. It provides a framework for how we deal with mourning and loss. That on an intellectual and theological level, we really follow Aaron's response of silence. We can't fathom why our nation, our community, has to endure horrors. Let's say if we're talking about, you know, the Shoah and the horrors of the Shoah, there's no logical, compelling explanation that we can offer. We don't understand why there's so much suffering in the world, why bad things happen to good people. Thinking about Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael today, we don't understand why a precious chayal has to fall in battle. And every loss and each situation, of course, is very different. But Vayidom, we're silent. And we have faith in Hashem despite not understanding. That's one dimension. Actually, we say at the Pesach Seder, B'damaye chayi, B'damaye chayi. And that's usually understood to mean that it's through the blood of the Karban Pesach and through the blood of the Karban Bila, right? Damayich, through the blood of. But I once heard the explanation that also it means bidamayich, that through our ability to at times be silent, that when we suffer loss as individuals, as a family, as a community, as a nation, loss of a loved one, go through a tough time, a suffering, tragedy. So there's an element of just not understanding and saying, Kol man da'avad rachmana latavavad, that everything that happens, that there's a plan, we don't understand why. And we say, whatever happens in the world, that latavavad, it might not be good, it might not be pleasing, and it's painful, but latavavad, there's a plan and a purpose to everything that happens in the world. I'm reminded, actually, of Dr. Norman Blumenthal tells a story about the Lazer Rebbe, and that he once lost all of his money. It was terrible floods, and he had lost all his money. And the students, but the students were the ones who knew about it, and they were the ones who had to share it with the Rebbe what had happened. And they didn't know how they were going to tell the news to him. So perhaps I've shared this with you in the past, that so what they did is they came over to him, and they said, if someone were to, you know, lose a lot of money in business, isn't it true, Rebbe, that we have to think about the Gemara that says that Kol man da'avad rachmana latavavad, and that we make a bracha for the bad just like we make a bracha for the good? And the Rebbe said, of course, right? That's the perspective a Jew has to have, that everything happens for a reason, and we say the bracha of Dayana Ames just like we say the bracha Tova Meitiv, with full belief in Hashem. And the Rebbe said, of course. And then the students continued and said, what happens if floods come and destroy a person's property? So still also, the person has to believe in that Gemara, that Kol man da'avad rachmana latavavad, that everything that happens is for the good, and you make a bracha, k'shem shem v'rachan ala tov v'rachan ala ra, that you make a bracha on the bad, just like you make a bracha on the good. And the Rebbe said, of course. And then they said, well, what happens if the person loses all his money also? He said, yes, of course. So then the students shared with their Rebbe, the Lazer Rebbe. They said, well, Rebbe, sorry to have to tell you this, but this is you, that unfortunately your field was flooded, and your business, you lost all your money. And the Rebbe, he heard this from the students, and he cries out, and he faints, he collapses. When they revived him, so they said to the Rebbe, they said, why did you cry out and collapse? I thought you told us that you're supposed to believe in that Gemara that says that everything happens for a reason. And you're supposed to even say a bracha over it. So the Rebbe responded and said, Taka, that's a shver Gemara. That's a very difficult Gemara. And so that's what the Rebbe was sharing. And so what this teaches us is that, you know, that things are very, very difficult. And we try to believe, and as a Jew, we believe that everything happens for a reason. And so that's why we have silence, Vayidom. So with the silence that we have, B'damayich Chayi is not just with the blood of the Karban Pesach and the blood of the Mila, but it means B'damayich, through the Vayidom. that we just have to, you know, not every question has an answer. We don't understand why things, we don't always understand why things happen in the world. The Chasam Sofer says that's why that Moshe asked this question to Hashem. When he says, show me your ways, really Moshe was asking Hashem, explain to me why bad things happen to good people. And Hashem shows Moshe his back. So the simple understanding of that is that we don't fully understand Hashem's ways. We could only gain a sense of it by seeing the back of Hashem, or kind of like a, you know, a dimension of why things happen. However, the Chasam Sofer explained that what the meaning of this is that when you're going through an experience, a difficult experience, you often don't understand why. It's only later, maybe at some point later, a few years later, maybe a generation later, maybe 1,000 years later, then when looking back, then you could understand perhaps a little bit of the reason why you had to go through that experience, how you grew from it, and you have a little bit more of an understanding. That's why it says in the Seder that the three things that you have to say, that you have to speak about at the Seder are Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. That it seems out of order. It should have been Maror represents the slavery, Matzah is the Geula, and Pesach is the night before the Geula. So it should have been Maror, Pesach, Matzah. Why is the order at the Seder Pesach, Matzah, and then Maror? Maror comes first. Maror is the slavery. Perhaps the answer is that only after the Pesach and Matzah, after you get through the period of time and you experience that sense of redemption and salvation, and then you could have a little bit of a sense and understanding of why you had to go through the Maror. So that's one dimension. That's the Vayidom, that we're silent, we have faith in Hashem, despite not fully understanding. But with the silence, we also give nechama. We give nechama one to the other about the righteousness of those who were taken from us. We're in awe of the incredible accomplishments and heroism of the Kedoshim, of lost loved ones, of fallen soldiers who were also Kedoshim, who died with Mesiras Nefesh for Am Yisrael. And so we comfort ourselves and we comfort one another by relating the memories, speaking about their qualities. And we're sustained by those memories because that shows that they continue to live on. And finally, so with the silence and with the nechama, right? Silence is the Vayidom Aaron. The second dimension is the nechama. That's what Rashi highlights, that Moshe was giving nechama to Aaron. And the third dimension is the Rashbam, which is that after recognizing that there's much in the world we don't understand and we have to comfort ourselves, but then we do something else. Then we look towards the future. We inspire one another to move forward. We ask ourselves, how can we take that memory or experience and bring meaning to it through our actions? And that's what Moshe says to Aaron, according to the Rashbam, which is, okay, that with the pain, with the suffering, now we have to be inspired by them to carry the torch forward and keep the service going and move on. Carrying their legacy with us. All right, so hopefully everyone by Zoom is still connected here. Okay, thanks for those who have their pictures on. For those who are names, that's also good. And that's at least a little bit of Nadav and Avihu and this terrible thing that happens, the terrible event that occurs with the death of Nadav and Avihu and the three different dimensions of response. Now, a little bit later that day, according to the Rashbam, they have to continue bringing the karbanos. They have to move forward with the service. There's a fascinating narrative here that after Hashem says to Aaron, says that you have to make sure not to be intoxicated when you're engaged in service. Some of Farshim derive from here that one of the problems that caused the sin was that they were intoxicated. Another explanation is that they didn't ask a question. You know, they didn't ask a shaila from Moshe or Aaron. They just went into the Holy of Holies. And the simple explanation is that it was just that they were so excited and they wanted to get closer to Hashem, but they brought something that was simply not authorized. Creativity at times is beautiful, but when you're talking about the Holy of Holies, when the stakes are high, you have to really follow the instruction manual. And you have to be very, very careful to rigorously follow the laws and instructions when you're in the Mishkan and certainly in the Holy of Holies. And that's why it says, Asher lo tziva otam, they brought something about which they weren't commanded. But then after this, the Pasuk says, if you look at Pasuk Tet Zayin, all right, so it says, Vetzir hachatat, okay, by Chamishi. Okay, so this is after the death of Nadav and Avihu, after this brief conversation with Moshe and Aaron, and Hashem says to Aaron about being careful about not drinking wine before you serve in the Mishkan. So then in Pasuk Tet Zayin it says, it starts talking about the Seir of the Rosh Chodesh. And there's a fascinating brief conversation between Moshe and Aaron. There are very few narratives, by the way, in the entire Sefer Vayikra. I think you have it here in Parsha Shmini, is this a narrative that we're learning about. And then you have a narrative later on with the Mekalel. And so there's only just a couple of narratives in the entire Sefer Vayikra. The rest is the laws and mitzvos. So here in Chamishi it says, Ve'asir chatas darosh darash Moshe. Then Moshe was inquiring. He was darosh darash. He was inquiring insistently about the sin offering of Rosh Chodesh. V'hine soraf. And it was burned entirely. Vayiktsof al Elazar vali Tamar b'nei Aaron. Moshe got angry. He got angry at Elazar and Itamar, the remaining sons of Aaron. And he says to them, Madu lo achaltem esachatos b'mkom kadosh. Why don't you eat the sin offering? Okay, we've learned about in the past that, yes, the Ola is completely burned to Hashem. But the Chatas, portions of the Chatas are eaten by the Kohanim. This is the Chatas of Rosh Chodesh. And so it should have been eaten by the Kohanim. He gets angry at Elazar and Itamar. Out of respect to Aaron, he doesn't get angry at Aaron, he gets angry at the kids. But he says, why didn't you eat the chatas in the prescribed location? But Aaron comes to the rescue, and Aaron responds on their behalf in Pasuk Yutet. Says, Vayedaber Aaron el Moshe, Hein hayom ikrivu ot chatatam vet olatam levnei Hashem, that we offered the sin offering and the elevation offerings before Hashem. Vatikreno si ka'ela, and these things have befallen me. Now that such things have befallen me, v'achalti chatas hayom, if I were to eat the chatas today, hayita b'enei Hashem, would Hashem approve of that? Okay, so Aaron gives some kind of response. Okay, maybe it's not exactly clear what his response is, but he gives a response. He says, I just lost two of my sons. And Elazar and Itamar lost their two brothers. You want us to go on as usual, to go on as if nothing happened, and to eat the karban? V'chalti chatas hayom. Would that be something that Hashem would approve of? Vayishma Moshe, and Moshe hears this from Aaron, vayita be'inav, and he approves. He accepts the statement of Aaron and the defense of Aaron. Just to explain a little bit, the Mefarshim explain that there were really three sin offerings that day. One of them was the sin offering that was brought by Nachshon. There were three different sin offerings. One was the special offering of Nachshon, who is the leader of the tribe of Yehuda. The second sin offering, the second chatas, was for the inauguration of the Mishkan. And the third chatas was for Rosh Chodesh, because that day was the first day of Nisan, and that was Rosh Chodesh. And without getting too much into the weeds here, but Moshe had already told Aaron and his sons that even though in general you're not supposed to eat offerings as an onen, if a kohen or a kohen gadol loses a loved one, so they're supposed to offer the offerings, but they don't have to eat them. They shouldn't eat them. However, Moshe had already told Aaron that you and your sons should eat the meal offerings, the special meal offerings of that day, with special meal offerings for the opening of the Mishkan. So Aaron reasoned as follows, according to Rashi and other Meforshim, that Aaron reasoned as follows, that maybe there's a distinction between the offerings that were brought, the special offerings of that moment, called Kadshei Sha'a, and offerings that were meant not just for that moment, but were meant for future generations. So when thinking about the karbanos that were brought, the three karbanos, right, remember the first one was brought by Nachshon, the second chatas was brought because of the inauguration of the Mishkan, those were special karbanos that were brought on that day, and they weren't going to be repeated the next month or the next year. Those were special offerings for that special moment in history. However, the chatas of the Rosh Chodesh, that's the chatas that's supposed to be brought every single Rosh Chodesh. So Aaron made a distinction between the Kadshei Sha'a and the Kadshei Doros. The Kadshei Sha'a, I mean the special offerings, so the special offerings of Nachshon and the special offering of the inauguration of the Mishkan, so those are like the special meal offerings, like the special menachos. And that's where the Kohanim were supposed to eat those offerings. However, by the seer of Rosh Chodesh, that's Kadshei Doros, that's a regular karban. That's going to be brought every month. So Aaron and his sons, there was some logic that went into it. They decided not to eat from it because they said, we're an Oni. An Oni is somebody who just lost a loved one, right? Aaron's two sons, Elazar and Itamar's two brothers, had just died. And the regular rule is that a Kohen is not supposed to eat karbanos as an onen in that state of mourning. So that's at least a little bit of the logic, and if you're confused, it's okay, but there's a distinction between Kadshei Sha'a and Kadshei Doros, and that maybe that Aaron and his children were supposed to eat the Kadshei Sha'a, the special meal offerings of the day and the special sin offerings of the day, but for the Kadshei Doros, for like the carbon that's going to be brought for future generations, like the Rosh Chodesh offering. So Aaron thought that should follow the regular rule of that that a Kohen, and even a Kohen Gadol, is not supposed to eat from that offering. Leaving that aside, at least that was the logic of Aaron. But essentially, what does Aaron respond? He says basically that, you know, would God approve of me just going on as normal? I just lost my two sons. And in mourning, Kohanim typically don't eat from offerings which require a spirit of festivity. And so, but Moshe had instructed Aaron that while I recognize you're grieving, since today is the opening day of the Mishkan, it's an exception and you should eat the sacrifices. But Aaron understood Moshe's instruction to be just referring to the special offerings, but not to the offering that's brought on Rosh Chodesh, because that's not really a special offering connected to the Mishkan. That's something that just happened to be Rosh Chodesh that day. But what's really incredible, I think, with regards to this conversation, is that Moshe hears this response. All the community leaders and the elders are watching this standoff. Moshe has gotten angry. He got angry. And we see that, you know, later on, Moshe gets angry with the hitting of the rock. Moshe was a man of tremendous, extraordinary conviction. But it could be that when your greatest strength in certain situations could be a liability. And according to the Rambam, with the hitting of the rock, the Rambam says that the sin of Moshe did commit some sin. And the Rambam explains that the sin of Moshe was the fact that he got angry at Bnei Yisrael. When he got angry at Bnei Yisrael, it made them think that Hashem was angry with them when Hashem wasn't angry at them at that time. And I know that's going a little far afield. It's talking about a different part of Chumash, but that's another situation where Moshe gets angry and it was wrong for him to get angry. And the Rambam says that was the sin of Moshe. So you see in a certain sense how Moshe was a man of passion, of fire, of tremendous conviction. But there could be situations where your strength becomes a liability, and maybe Moshe's great strength became a liability in that episode of the hitting of the rock, and here also where he gets angry at Elazar and Itamar, and it turns out that it was wrong for him to get angry at Elazar and Itamar. By the way, another example of that, where a strength is a liability, is by Aaron. Aaron was an Ish Shalom, an Oev Shalom V'Rodev Shalom, as it says in Pirkei Avos. He always tried to bring peace between all the members of Israel. When Aaron passed away, says that all of Bnei Yisrael mourned for 30 days. And the Medrash says that Aaron was more popular than Moshe. By Moshe, when Moshe passes away, it says that Bnei Yisrael mourned for 30 days. When Aaron passed away, it says all of Bnei Yisrael mourned for 30 days. That's not to say that Aaron was on a higher level than Moshe. We've learned this in the past, because life is not just a popularity contest. But what you see from here is that Aaron was a man of shalom, of peace. He wanted Bnei Yisrael to get along with one another. He wanted everyone to be on good terms. When Reuven and Shimon were fighting with one another, the Medrash says, that he would go over to Reuven and say, Shimon wants to apologize. And he would go over to Shimon and say, Reuven wants to apologize, even though they weren't really interested in apologizing. And so you see that Aaron was somebody who would even bend the truth for the sake of peace. Moshe was a man of MS, of conviction, of fire, unyielding. While Aaron was a man who was Ohev Shalom and Rodev Shalom, and he would even perhaps bend the truth for the sake of Shalom. But then, when do we find that Aaron's greatest strength of being a man of Shalom is a liability? That's right, by the Chet Egel. By the Chet Egel. And there, when the people come to Aaron, so, you know, Aaron says, okay, we'll make a chag to Hashem tomorrow. So he tries to redirect it. He tries to stall. He was hoping that Moshe Rabbeinu would come down by the next day. According to Rashi, he saw Chur. He saw that his colleague Chur had been killed. So he figured that he needed to take a different tactic. It wouldn't help if he was also killed. So Rashi is trying to defend Aaron. But Aaron certainly has a complicated role in the episode of the golden calf. But Just on the face of it, that was probably a time, again, different explanations, but that was probably a time for Aaron to say, no, we're not going to do this. I'm sorry. But it seems like that here Aaron's strength of wanting to, you know, accommodate people, he didn't want to make a tumult, he wanted people to be on good terms, he didn't want to upset people, which was a great strength most of the time, but in that situation, it became it served to his detriment, where he was perhaps too accommodating. We also see this by Miriam, where Miriam speaks Lashon Hara where was that? That was in Parshas Chukas, where Miriam speaks it was the end of Bahaloscha, where Miriam, you know, speaks negatively about her brother Moshe. And it was something relating to Moshe's family life. And it could be that because Moshe separated for a period of time from Tzipora, and Miriam was upset about that. Why does that connect to the personality of Miriam? If you remember when Miriam was a young girl, she was upset that her parents Amram and Yocheved had separated. And she said they need to get back together, even though it was during a time of slavery and persecution. And a lot of the men, especially the men, were saying, what's the purpose of bringing a child into this terrible situation? They're going to have to live a life of suffering. But the righteous women, including Miriam, said no, that we have an obligation. We have to maintain our hope and optimism, even during difficult times. And it was Miriam who convinced her parents to get back together, according to Rashi. Miriam is a young girl. And so Miriam was someone who's had many strengths. She was a righteous leader of Israel. But one of the distinguishing traits of Miriam was her absolute devotion and commitment to family life, to couples staying together, no matter what. So then later on, years later, when she saw that Moshe had separated from Zipporah, so then she was very upset about it. She didn't realize that this was, of course, a very, very different situation. And even though it was right for Miriam to encourage her parents to get back together in Mitzrayim, and of course they eventually got back together and they had Moshe Rabbeinu, but when it came to Moshe separating from Zipporah, that was a different circumstance, it was a different reason, and that it was wrong for Miriam to speak Lashon Hara and to speak negatively about Moshe at that time. So we have three different examples of cases where a strength could be a liability. And I think when you think about yourself, all of you are people who have lots of strengths and talents, but to think about that doesn't mean if you have a strength or a talent that you always utilize that strength and talent. There could be certain situations where you should be sensitive to the fact that, if I take that trait of mine and I apply that, maybe it doesn't work in this particular situation, because with every strength and talent, if that could be in a particular situation, it could be a liability. See that by Moshe, whose fiery passion was an incredible strength, but it became a liability in the hitting of the rock. And here also where he gets angry at Bnei Israel. Then, according to the Rambam, that was a sin. And here he gets angry at Elazar and Itamar. You have it with Aaron, a man of tremendous peace and harmony. He always wanted the Jewish people to be together, ba'achdos. But perhaps he was too accommodating in the story of the golden calf. And with Miriam, one of her strengths was her absolute commitment to family life. We see that by Amram and Yocheved. But it became something that served to her detriment when she criticized Moshe unfairly, according to the Mefarshim. And so that's something for us to keep in mind, where sometimes the strength could be a liability. But there's two other ideas that I wanted to just highlight here, that Moshe, even though he gets angry, after he hears Aaron's defense, where Aaron says, I just lost my two sons, and this carbon is maybe different than the other carbonos, as we explained earlier. And what does it say? Vayishma Moshe vayitabeinov. Moshe hears this, and he agrees. He agrees. It's pleasing in his eyes. Wow, that's amazing. Remember when Yisro, his father-in-law, gives him advice? And Moshe listens, believe it or not. He listens even to his father-in-law, who's butting into his matters, telling him how to do his job. Moshe's a prophet, greatest prophet who ever lived, but he listens to his father-in-law. And here also, Vayishma Moshe, Vayita Be'enav. So here it's an incredible conversation where Moshe, admits that Aaron is right. And that really teaches us an important lesson, because imagine a political candidate for president or Congress admitting he was wrong. Or if during a debate he says, that's an interesting point that I didn't think of. Yeah, you're right. Great point. It would be game over. End of her candidacy. That would be it. And in Judaism, in our tradition, while of course we strive to have clear and correct opinions, we want leaders and we want to be people who are not always admitting errors. But you see that according to Rashi sometimes admits he does not know the meaning of a phrase. And to admit that another person is correct is not a sign of weakness, but really is a display of tremendous, tremendous strength. That's one other lesson we see from this story. It says, Vayishma Moshe vayita be'enav. And the third thing is that we learn from the story really a powerful lesson, which we need to take to heart, which is that the Torah recognizes the humility of, and the humanity, rather, the humanity of Aaron. That he was a tzaddik and the Kohen Gadol, and Moshe made the law clear that the sacrifices should be eaten. But ultimately, what takes precedence is Aaron's humanity. Because Aaron responds and says, yes, I know there's karbanos, and I know that the service has to continue. And I know that you see me as a tzaddik, but Vatikrena Osi Kaele, I just lost my two sons. You want things to go on as normal? And so what you see here from this story is that the Torah recognizes, because it says, the Torah recognizes the humanity of Aaron, and that even though he's a, you know, he's a great tzaddik, but he's a human being, and the Torah validates that. And so that's some of the very, very, I think, important lessons that we learn from the death of Nadav and Avihu, the tripartite framework of response, of silence, of consolation, and of moving forward. And then you have a little bit we spoke about in terms of what went wrong, but in the aftermath here, about kind of keeping in mind that lesson of the Rashbam, that you have to move forward and you have to carry forward the legacy, but that doesn't mean that everything stays the same. And Aaron is a human being. And the Torah, and ultimately the kind of the conclusion of the story, validates Aaron's humanity by saying that because he lost his sons, it made sense that he would not eat the karbanos. That things don't go on exactly as normal, and Moshe recognizes the legitimacy of Aaron's defense. Okay, let's get some, whether over Zoom or Mom and Mori are here. Okay, let's see. Somebody just sent in a comment. Is this where the concept of Onin comes from this parsha? Yes, that's yes, because it says earlier. This is one of the sources. This is one of the sources of Aninus, because he says Vatikreno Sikaela, that I shouldn't eat the karbanos. But it comes up a couple other places as well. Now, Aninus is the time between death and burial. The person is an Onein. Halachically speaking, a person is not supposed to have meat and wine during that time, because your focus is supposed to be on taking care of the needs of the funeral and the burial of the loved one. At the same time, the laws of Shiva don't apply yet, and really you're not supposed to do any positive commandments, and you don't say any brachos. Why? Because osik b'mitzvah patam in a mitzvah. You're involved in the mitzvah of a burial, so that exempts you from other mitzvot. Also, I think Rav Soloveitchik once explained that you're not in the state of mind to do mitzvot as an onein. After the funeral and after the burial, so then you transition from the state of an onein or aninut, and the person becomes an avel and goes into avelut. In Avelut, there's no food restrictions. You're allowed to have meat. You're allowed to have wine, although don't get carried away. Certainly, you do it in honor, memory of the loved one. And then you have all the laws. You have all the laws of Shiva and all the mitzvot supply, generally speaking, in the time of Avelut. Okay, any other thoughts or questions?
Just want to know, was their punishment of deaths of these two sons, it's an extreme punishment.
Yeah.
It's an extreme punishment due to because they were so great, that the greater the person, somehow we see throughout history, great people.
Okay, my mom asked an interesting question.
Like Rabbi Akiva get such extreme punishments or extreme deaths. It's hard to me, the deaths of two sons is terribly extreme, terribly sad. And
okay, my mother's commenting that it seems to be an extreme punishment of Nadav and Avihu, and that's an interesting point. And the question is it because of their high level, of their holy level, that perhaps there's a stricter justice or stricter punishment? Susan just posted something on the chat. Here, similarly, the sons of Aaron being consumed by fire in the height of the presence and with a holy presence being in our midst, what hope do ordinary people have in times of Hashem being hidden? So kind of like two sides of the question. You know, it's interesting. This, of course, it's a very difficult episode here and tragic. I wonder if their death is not, it could be that it was a punishment. It could be that it was being in the wrong place at the wrong time, because you saw that the fire came down and consumed the karbanos, and then the fire comes down again. Instead of consuming the karbanos, it consumes them. So it could be that it was a punishment. It could be that by going into a place where they weren't supposed to be, and the fire was coming down, so that killed them. Of course, nothing's coincident. Nothing just happens. So it does seem to be, you know, some form of punishment. But it could be that they were now in the wrong place, because this is the place where the fire is supposed to consume the sacrifices, and it consumes them. Aaron actually had this concern, Susan, because Hashem tells Moshe to encourage Aaron that he has to become the Kohen Gadol. He has to move forward. And Aaron was very, very nervous, because when he saw the altar, he saw the corners of the altar, and the corners made him think of the golden calf, of the sin of the golden calf, and his complicated role in it. Moreover, when he was told to go into the Holy of Holies, he didn't want to go in, because his two sons were killed in the Holy of Holies. So in a certain sense, he was expressing, you know, your sentiments, which is, you know, they died, and what hope do I have? And maybe that's going to happen to me. But bizos yavo Aaron ala kodesh, that's what Moshe encourages Aaron. Look, you have to just, of course, believe in Hashem, follow the mitzvos, do, you know, make your best effort to follow the mitzvos, follow the rules. But I think that was a unique situation, because that was in the Holy of Holies. That was in the Mishkan. And so that's why they were killed, because that was in the Holy of Holies. The stakes were high. But I think for most of us, thankfully, perhaps we don't have to be perfect, although we try our best, of course, to keep the mitzvos as best as we can. But I think you're right in terms of maybe their high level as tzaddikim, they suffered a certain fate. And Susan, even, you know, that we just like Aaron, Moshe said to Aaron, that bezos, with this, with those experiences, with those memories, with the golden calf, with the death of your sons, yavo Aaron ala kodesh, you have to move forward. Hashem wants us to be honest. We have to continue to move forward despite the painful experiences that we have in the past. We don't push those aside. We incorporate them, and we just have hope and faith moving forward. Yes, Susan.
So what I wanted to say is we have two examples. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We have two examples of at the height of Hashem's presence, the Exodus, where we just came through all the plagues and the crossing of the sea. We have the old golden calf being built despite all this. And now we have the height of the Mishkan, where we have the presence and the cloud. And the second thing happens that is so devastating. And so we have two examples. I'm not sure what to make of it, in which the presence is there. We know what we have to do, and yet these terrible things, we do these things that warrant these terrible punishments in a way. I mean, it could be that there wasn't a punishment. It could be that what your explanation, but it just seems so something to look at. Why during this height, like what would happen in the time of Mashiach? This also supposed to be revelation. Everybody sees the presence of Hashem. So why? This is like a warning of some sort, and I just don't know what to make of it.
That's a very interesting comment. We see it. They were at the, you know, the highest of the highs with the revelation at Sinai, and then you have the golden calf where they have this terrible downfall. And here also, they have the building of the Mishkan, which is supposed to be a perpetuation of Sinai, and they're really on a high level. And then again, they suffer a tragedy. So I want to think about that.
But it could be zealotry. It's against zealotry of some sort. Maybe
right.
That's the only connection. I don't know.
Right, right. Scott here posted a chat. Anger is like Avodah Zarah. The Gemara does have a comment like that. And I think the Gemara does say something about it removing you from the world. That kinna taiva v'chavo. That's Pirkei Avos. Mosin es Adam and Olam, Scott. Kinna, taiva, and kava. It doesn't say kas, but it does mention that kas is something that we try to avoid. Moshe wasn't perfect, and according to the Rambam, he sinned in that area. But the Rambam also says in the Mishneh Torah that a person has to go to the extreme. In general, when it comes to character traits, He's supposed to try to take the middle road. He's supposed to try to take the balanced route of moderation. Right? So in terms of generosity, you're generous, but not overly generous, because then you're going to need money. You're supposed to be happy, but not frivolous. You're supposed to always take the middle road. But there's two exceptions to that. One exception is humility, where you're supposed to be like, you're supposed to be extremely humble, with confidence, but extremely humble. And the second exception, where you're supposed to go to the extreme, the Rambam says, is to never get angry. Try to always keep your cool. And you're also mentioning, Moshe not only agreed with Aaron, but he saw that it was good. That's right. He didn't just say, okay. He said that it was good. It was good. All right. Wonderful. Thank you all so much.
Safe travels. Safe travels.
Thank you.
Be well. Bye.
Thanks for joining. Thanks so much for joining.
Good talk, Rabbi.
Brachtia.